This is Crossroads with Terry Mattingly, a Rational Sheep podcast.
Camp Mystic Survivors singing on a bus during evacuation while passing scenes of Texas flooding damage. Terrible story of many dead and many more missing. How is the media covering it? For instance, the Associated Press says floods have turned beloved Texas camp into a nightmare, girls still missing, but does it explain why the camp is beloved? Greetings and welcome to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry is Senior Fellow on Communications and Culture at St. Constantine College in Houston, Texas. He writes Rational Sheep, a Substack newsletter on faith, family, and mass media. He's author of the National On Religion column for the Andrews McMeel Universal Syndicate, and for two decades, he led the GetReligion.org website. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
You have a personal connection to this part of Texas and to some people who live there who have suffered through these flash floods.
Right. I've lived in several regions of Texas. I have not lived in the Hill Country, but I went to college at Baylor University, and we frequently went down into the Guadalupe River area with friends and stuff. But the most important thing is that my sister lives in Kerrville, and her husband, a retired Baptist pastor, served as the mayor of Kerrville from 2018 to 2022. So there are family ties there, and we had loved ones involved directly in the flooding. And I don't want to talk about the details about that, but let's just say they were in a hotel facility across the river from Camp Mystic, and things got very dicey for all kinds of people. But that's true for hundreds and hundreds of people. If I could stress one thing about the Texas Hill Country, it's that people in Texas have a thing about going anywhere in the summer where there's water and slightly cooler temperatures. And pretty much the definition of that for most of Texas is the Texas Hill Country, the area associated with President Lyndon Baines Johnson. And it's a beautiful part of the state, and it's marginally cooler, and the Guadalupe River dominates the most scenic parts of that region. And people need to understand this is a region dominated by rocky canyons. I mean, and just north of where this flooding occurred, you have canyons that I've driven through a couple of times that are 4 to 5 stories tall of solid rock. So if you're going to get into a flash rain situation, and it happens to be following a couple of days of normal to heavy rains that filled up the aquifers that run under this river and under this rocky terrain, that water has nowhere to go. And shooting down out of that canyon region, you have what everyone is now calling a wall of water. And the statistic that you had roughly 27 inches of rain fall in 45 minutes in the middle of the night, that statistic is stunning. I mean, that's stunning compared to what we've gone through here in East Tennessee and Western North Carolina, where we know a little bit about flooding this year as well, to say the least. But doing it on solid rock and on extremely rocky terrain makes the quickness of the entire flood situation even stronger. But here's the thing that listeners need to be listening for now, when they're following the coverage of this event. It's one thing to have people staying in camps, and you have their names, and you have contact information, and the region's hotels and established campgrounds and retreat centers, like the very famous Laity Lodge, which is just outside of Kerrville. But during the 4th of July weekend, the entire region fills up with people in RVs and tents. And these people, you have no idea where they're coming from. And I talked to my sister about this shortly after the floods, and we were looking ahead for the next couple of days, and she said, Terry, the missing number is going to go up maybe by hundreds for the simple reason that we're going to have to wait for people all over the country to be able to get through the phone lines and call the Kerrville officials and say, my uncle from Michigan, I think he was there fishing. Or I read about a group of people from Oregon who an entire family reunion was occurring in RVs along the river. Those people, they have no quick, instant way to know they were even there. So yesterday when the missing shot up to like 160, 180, I already knew because my sister had told me it was coming. That's the people from out of town. That's the people from all over the country. And needless to say, the cell phones are no longer working.
We've been hard on the New York Times in the past, but you say that the story was solid. How so?
It's far better than the Associated Press story. And what we have here is a classic example of what listeners have heard me say a million times. When you're faced with this kind of situation, put multiple people on the story. And that's exactly what the New York Times did there. And if you were looking for a way to get solid coverage very quickly, like 2 days later, and the story has been updated a couple of times as well, they assigned a religion writer based in Dallas, Texas, someone who knows the region very well, but is one of the two national religion beat correspondents for the Times. And then they assigned a reporter who is based in San Antonio, which is only like an hour from the edge of the Texas Hill Country. So you have a local reporter, someone who knows the weather and the struggles in this region, very lightly populated region. I think I heard a figure earlier today that there's only 25,000 people in Kerr County, but it happens to be a famous beauty spot for camps, fishing, lodges, bed and breakfasts, et cetera, et cetera. And they're all trying to get to water and cooler air and in the heat of Texas. And that's the definition of the Texas Hill Country. So 25,000 people is not a lot of population in that county. But for reasons that the New York Times story makes very clear, it's a very symbolic place in the summer.
So what would you make of the Associated Press's coverage?
Well, mainly they asked a lot of the logical questions, looking at it just strictly through the lens of a major disaster. And at the center of the major disaster is what it identifies as a Christian camp. And we don't learn a whole lot about that. And the New York Times, of course, had multiple stories. So I'm talking about the entire New York Times coverage. I'm focusing in on the fact that they immediately saw they needed to get the religion angle of this camp. And you see it over and over in the top of the story, and pretty quickly you start getting into details related to the churches, the cities, the neighborhoods, and the communities that have had their girls go to this camp. And we're talking about not just like a one-week camp, we're talking about a four-week camp or a two-week-long camp. And within 2 to 3 paragraphs, the New York Times heads you into that aspect of the story and the types of people who send their girls there, many for their first time away at, quote, sleepaway camp, unquote. I mean, but just to point out the obvious, one of the churches with a very close connection to this camp is the conservative, the rather evangelical giant Episcopal congregation in Houston that has been home base for the Bush family for a long time. And the story picked up by paragraph 4 that Laura Bush, the wife of former President George W. Bush, was actually a counselor at Camp Mystic years ago. And it didn't say that their daughters had gone to this camp. But I was talking to some other people related to the camp and to the region, they stressed that it's very common for this camp to have heightened security levels on the camp because of the children of people from the U.S. Senate, from major corporations. And at one point, I was told, they actually have a designated cabin for Secret Service agents at the camp. And one of the children who died in the flood is one of the members of the Hunt family, the billionaire, extremely powerful family that owns the Kansas City Chiefs, for example. One of their children died in the flood. So these are not boarded cabins on the side of a hill. This is a 100-year-old camp that has been dealing for generations with children linked to some of the most powerful churches and institutions in the state of Texas. And I thought it was interesting. One of the stories, I can't remember if it was the AP story. I think it was the Associated Press. Might have been the Religion News Service, but they overlapped their coverage a lot. It simply said that the security measures at the camp were unknown. Well, this was like a day after the flood, and I imagine there's not a lot of people returning phone calls from Camp Mystic right now. But the minute you've established what types of girls have been staying there for generations, I think it's safe to say this is a camp with a pretty solid legal team and a camp that is used to asking hard questions about safety and security. So we're going to find out a lot in the future days about this camp. And to me, we can come back to this. One of the stories that's lurking behind the religious details of this camp and of this very special region along the Guadalupe River, I think we're going to hear people asking questions about the future of independent Christian camps and whether in any kind of heightened legal environment, whether some of them might be at risk of going out of business or might have to change how they do things. I have a saying that I used to offer to my students when I was teaching journalism full time. When you're faced with this, any kind of situation of tragedy or safety or anything like that, or moral codes on campuses, whatever, the first thing you ask is, what are the lawyers saying? Because nonprofit Christian institutions operating on probably small financial margins, they are constantly hearing from their legal teams, like, we have to make this safer. We need to be more explicit about this. We have parents asking questions about this. What is our answer? And that's one of the questions I'm most sensitive to, because my brother, my older brother, is probably one of the Southern Baptist Convention's leading authorities on camping and on places of this kind and the programs that you do there. So, I mean, I've had this in my blood now for my entire life, that these kinds of places are important, they're special, and there are issues related to them that churches know they have to be careful about.
One of the things that mystified me about the Associated Press coverage, the headline described this as beloved Texas camp and did mention that it's a Christian camp for girls in the third paragraph, but then kind of left behind why anyone would consider it beloved. It was factually solid in terms of its coverage, but it never explained that particular adjective, especially in terms of the religious content of people's experiences there.
And I don't know the names that were involved in the Associated Press story. I don't know where they are, who they are, so I'm not going to judge that. What I can say is the Times took what I think is the proper approach. They immediately put people on this angle of the story who had some reason to be covering it. And so instead of beloved, you get the names of the churches. You get the names of the people and the families that have connection to this camp. And you realize that they have been holding prayer vigils in their church sanctuaries. And you get some of the heritage of the camp. One of the details that also struck me for personal reasons, there's a viral video that I hope we can embed some of that in this report or this podcast and this talk, of some of the girls on a bus after they've had the clearing to get the girls out of the camp. There's only, my understanding, my memory is there's only one road that's low in the water that you would have to cross to get to Mystic. So the girls are going out, and they're on a bus, an ordinary school bus, driving past some of the destruction, and you can hear them reacting to it. But the New York Times noted that they're singing the six songs that they have been taught at their camp. Then these are the six songs that are supposed to kind of describe their life at the camp and what goes on there and the spirit of the camp. And the first thing I noticed, and I got this through Rod Dreher, he had it up early, is the girls are singing a song called Pass It On. And Pass It On is a campfire song that was written by another dear friend of our family, legendary composer in Baptist and evangelical circles, named Kurt Kaiser, one of the key players in the Word Music Company. And Kurt Kaiser wrote Pass It On. The Lord of Love has come to me. I want to pass it on. And Kurt Kaiser actually played piano, was the musician for my wife and I's wedding in Waco, Texas. And so that was yet another personal connection for me, that one of the six songs they chose for the girls to learn to sing by heart, those girls were singing it and other songs as they drove out of the wreckage of the camp. And that's really emotional. And maybe the only thing I can fault them for, maybe no one was available yet who could have told them, what are the six songs? What were the songs at camp this year? The Times mentioned that some of these songs have been sung there for a century. I have no doubt that that's true. And I have no doubt that some of them are hymns. And Pass It On, this tells you something about my age, Pass It On was a campfire song when I was a teenager, and I'm 70. So that's 50 to 60 years right there. So the life of this camp and some of the other camps along that river, we're going to learn a lot more details in the future. And I would urge the reporters and the readers who are interested in this story to get into the life of the camp. Why did people send their girls to Camp Mystic over and over and over? I even online saw a reference early on, someone saying, well, you know, this had to be some sort of weird New Age camp because look at that name, Camp Mystic. Well, no, I'm sorry. It's not a weird New Age camp. And mystical is simply one of the words that's used over and over to describe the Texas Hill Country. And so Camp Mystic is probably just a reference to the region.
What did you make of the Religion News Service coverage?
Well, they shared their coverage with the Associated Press, and the main RNS story has vanished. And I'm not saying there's anything negative about that. I think what happened was that Religion News Service wrote an original story, and that got merged a little bit into the Associated Press. The RNS and the Associated Press have some limited cooperation efforts between their newsrooms. So if you're judging the Religion News Service story, you're basically, from my opinion, you're talking about the Associated Press. And there's not a whole lot of religion in that story. There is some. The other thing that we're now going to see, okay, here's just another reality for people to understand. There are very few roads in the Texas Hill Country. A lot of that is because of water, and a lot of that is because of terrain. We haven't been reading the usual stories about Southern Baptists and Catholics and others flooding into this region. No pun intended, but they always respond immediately. And First Baptist Church Kerrville is the base camp now for the Southern Baptist response. And to say that there are a couple of Southern Baptists in Texas is the understatement of the year. I grew up saying that, you know, the key issue in Texas life was the separation of Baptist and state. And there are more Baptists in Texas than there are people, is another way of stating that. So we're going to see a lot of stories about Southern Baptist response. And the fact that this camp, which was a Protestant camp, also had specific masses built into its schedule for Catholics tells us that the camp also had a lot of connection to large Catholic churches in Dallas, in San Antonio, in Houston, and in other parts of Texas. So I hope the Associated Press goes back to Religion News Service and says, can you give us one of your reporters who knows something about evangelicalism and knows something about Texas and maybe even knows something about camping traditions in evangelical Protestantism, and loan us that reporter so that we can do more follow-ups and deeper follow-ups from here on out.
Have you seen media coverage of some of the online reaction to this? I mean, a lot of it was immediately politicized, either from the angle of Donald Trump's cuts to the National Weather Service, and then kind of these were just Christian white girls, and some people just came out and said they got what they deserved because they were obviously Trump voters or something along those lines.
Yes. Yeah, that I can understand that that is definitely a part of the story. Political reactions in our age are automatic. But I've only heard one or two of the television reports. Now, what I have been doing is watching live feeds on YouTube from the TV stations in Houston, San Antonio, Dallas, and elsewhere. And needless to say, you're getting a more locally focused coverage there that understands a lot of the issues. And there are obviously questions anytime you have this many deaths. But let me point readers to two other things that they can look for. Let our listeners know if they're interested in the question you're asking, Todd, and that's a very important question. What were the staff cutbacks? What are the safety regulations? Here's two things you should listen for. One, there were incredible floods in this region in the late 1990s. And a flood in 1998 that was almost as bad as this one. And after that flood, there were lots of questions asked about safety in the Hill Country. And I've been looking to see what kind of legislation was passed and what kind of efforts were made to increase safety. But I also picked up in the local reports an issue that fits my always ask about the lawyers thought. And that is, be sensitive to the fact that for every alert in the Texas Hill Country for flooding, only about one out of six or seven of those alerts are going to lead to any degree of flooding at all, let alone a once a century flood of this kind, something truly catastrophic. Now, I predict we're going to be hearing about an issue that I think will affect religious camps and other small independent camps. How often can you sound an evacuation level flooding alert in this region before you have people start filing lawsuits that this was a false alarm and we ran up X number of $1,000s of costs in evacuations and stuff like that, and it turned out to be a totally false alarm? And who bears the cost of the false alarms is obviously not as important as hundreds of people dying, but it is a reality. And it's a reality that reflects the kinds of questions that loom over beloved traditions related to Christian camping all over America. And if you want to know where you find camps, you find them near bodies of water in very beautiful places. And beautiful places tend to often have mountains or hills. And you combine mountains, hills, beauty, water, and camps. This is not a situation that only happens in the Texas Hill Country. The mountains of North Carolina have many camps. The Ozarks in Arkansas and Missouri. All of these kinds of places are dotted with camps of this kind. And I think camps are going to become even more important in this age of questions about smartphones and mental health and anxiety and loneliness, because many parents are saying, well, what can I do? What if I can get my kid away from home and from this environment and around their friends and get them off to a camp like this for at least 4 weeks or 2 weeks? the smartphone can go away and they can learn all kinds of crafts and all kinds of sport and get to go to worship services every day. And maybe we'll have a chance to reestablish connections to our own children. I would be interested in knowing if Camp Mystic was a cell phone free facility. I do know from firsthand experience, cell signals up in those canyons and up that river are almost non-existent. Once again, low population density, and nobody wants massive cell towers sticking up at the top of their canyon and with their beautiful view of the river and the water and whatever. But we're going to see people try to find ways to improve cell phones and safety signals and alarm systems back up these rivers and these canyons in the hill country and in other parts of the country. I wouldn't be at all surprised at any minute now to see that name, Elon Musk, show up offering to volunteer dozens of small satellite dishes for that region and regions like it to try to increase the safety in emergency signaling to where people have better information sooner. But along the lines you're talking about, the timeline that has emerged, and people may need to look for this in their reports, they started sounding alarms several hours before the crest of water came down that river. And it appears that a really major alert went out at least an hour in advance. Now, this is the middle of the night, midnight to 3 a.m. And so you couldn't pick worse timing for something like this as well in terms of trying to get to people. We're going to see stories about the legal elements of this disaster. And frankly, those are fitting. And the governor of Texas has already said, we know some of the issues that we need to discuss about. And I believe the Texas legislature goes into special session on Monday to deal with some of these issues and with relief efforts.
So how was that aspect of this covered? Because while these things happen suddenly, they're long-term recovery, especially in remote places like this. How do you think that should be covered, keeping in mind the other angles that you say were either missed or picked up on?
Yeah, I think it would be interesting for someone to actually call the Relief and Disaster Agency of the Southern Baptist Convention and the Texas Baptist Convention and ask how the terrain and the flooding and the lack of access affected their own efforts to get in there, and call Catholic Social Services as well. I think that's an important story. And frankly, that's one that after major disasters tends to get covered pretty well now. And that is in part because you have people like Bobby Ross from Texas and Oklahoma, my former colleague at Get Religion, who tends to write about those issues himself and frequently does that for Religion News Service, operating as a freelance writer. So you have religious publications that are get on that. Baptist Press is obviously going to cover that and cover some of the services that are occurring in churches. So journalists don't have to go far to get the information on that side of the story. But I would immediately, there are national networks of camps of these sort. One of the most read pieces ever at Rational Sheep in the first year and a half of my Substack project on faith, family, and digital culture, one of the most read pieces that I've written there grew out of my interview with Jonathan Haidt, the author of The Anxious Generation, where he specifically says religious camps are going to play a crucial role in mental health issues related to digital media and smartphones in particular. And he praised religious camps for stepping forward and trying to do something on issues related to this. So I would immediately get in touch with the National Associations of Camps related to religious camps and small independent secular camps and try to find out what are their current policies, what do they think could happen to their policies, and what are they actively doing to step forward on some of these safety issues both in terms of physical health, but also mental health.
Talk a little bit about how, while these things are national stories, and that's certainly necessary, the best reporting on these and closest to the actual issues surrounding that you've been discussing here is probably the local coverage.
Well, it really helps if you realize what a small, complex environment the Texas Hill Country is. Even more small and in many ways more delicate than where I live, which is the southern highlands of East Tennessee, North Carolina, and southern Virginia. The Hill Country is just a very interesting place. It's packed with artists. Many of our listeners may have, when you're listening to this, the odds are decent that some of them literally can look down at their hands or around their necks, and they have jewelry from the famous company James Avery, one of the nation's leading providers of religious symbols and jewelry, which is based outside of Kerrville, Texas. And it's there for a reason. Artists have come there for decades to do their work. That's another interesting story angle. One of my favorite albums from that region is the great guitarist Phil Keggy and another musician from the Pacific Northwest named Jeff Johnson have done a series of albums that opened with an album of instrumental music trying to capture the spiritual nature of the Texas Hill Country, what the water sounds like and what being there sounds like and the echoes in the canyons. Because we're in Texas, which is a state that is so intense with Christian culture, I think it would help to have reporters that understand that culture and also understand, to be blunt, the role that the Texas Hill Country plays in that culture in terms of being one of the parts of Texas that Texans are proudest of in terms of the scenery, the golf courses, the fishing, the music, the food. The Hill Country is legendary. And if you don't have someone on your team that has driven through these canyons and knows something about this region northwest of San Antonio, something about the Lyndon Baines Johnson Ranch and some of the other things in this region, you're going to have trouble covering this story because it's a truly unique place.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow on Communications and Culture at St. Constantine College in Houston, Texas. He writes Rational Sheep, a Substack newsletter on faith, family, and mass media. He's author of the National On Religion column for the Andrews McBeal Universal Syndicate, and for two decades, he led the GetReligion.org website. Terry, thanks.
Glad to be here.
I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you next week. Thanks for listening to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly.
You've been listening to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly, the Rational Sheep podcast.